describe what your seminar is about and what it is intended to do, starting with what you mean by the title of it, Numbers Rule the World.
Well, that's been a common claim, that numbers are the predominant form of evidence that people point to when they make a claim about something. Numbers are crucial in all kinds of decision making and so on. That's what I meant by the title. It's a common theme in all the literature on numbers, that numbers are important. We live in a quantified world, and that's a central feature of the kind of world we live in. The point of the course is to get people to think about the pervasiveness of numbers in our lives and what that means, and also to think more critically about numbers as they are used and presented to make a case for something. We start by reading some basic texts on the role of numbers in public discourses. These are all How Numbers Go Wrong books. So we try to come up with cataloging ways that numbers get distorted or misused. I argue that the real key issues with regard to the use of numbers aren't numerical. They're issues of methodology and research design. So that's the second part of the course. Third part is we start looking at how numbers travel. Say a survey is done on drug use, and so you end up with maybe hundreds of pages of results, and then the authors or the funding agency comes out with a summary and maybe a press release, maybe a press conference, and then the media picks it up. The media report on this study, and then the media may use those numbers in other contexts. So I look, for example, at studies of drug use, particularly during the crack scare in 1986, and how you have the survey itself, you have the summaries that the authors make, and then you have the media reports, and then you have those numbers being used or not in the broader discussion of the crack problem in America. So we do a couple of those things, and then I complicate things by saying, look, the starting point is often complicated and to some extent obscure. When you're looking at studies, for example, the efficacy of drugs, what you often find is you don't know what studies are out there because they're selectively reported, selectively published. So it takes some digging to figure out what are all the studies say on a particular antidepressant and what do they show. And then we look more generally at what are called evidence gaps. And then what we're doing now in the course is looking at how numbers sort of frame our everyday lives. So we look at things like the development of the SATs and the impact of people, the impact of public opinion research on how people define themselves and census data. Now we're looking at, particularly at the issue of expertise. One argument is that quantitative experts who can manipulate numbers, who can run regression equations, analyze quantitative data well, that kind of expertise is in some way replacing more traditional forms of expertise. And that's where the course ends. So, yeah, it's cutting into the issue of numbers from a variety of different directions.
I know that it's a Mellon seminar. Can you explain first what that means?
Yeah.
And then also get into when and why and how you decided to create this course.
Yes, yeah. I got appointed Mellon professor, and which gave me a grant of money for 3 years, and I decided to use it to buy books. And I'm constantly noticing studies in the media or claims being made and then trying to track them down. So it was something I was doing anyway. And I was also interested in research methodology. I teach the social research course. And then I've been on the CEP, and so I had all the documents that had been generated by the Committee on Quantitative Literacy. And so I started asking myself, could I put together a numbers course that wasn't about numbers? It wasn't a research methods course. Because most of the stuff on quantitative literacy says, yes, it should be taught across the curriculum. But what they have in mind is different versions of a kind of statistics course. So psych might teach its statistics differently from econ. So I was wondering about just doing a course that wasn't any of those, that incorporated a little bit of that, but provided more of a historical and sociological perspective. So I started reading in about a dozen different areas, and this course is an ongoing effort to mesh them all together. It attracts quite a range of students. The first two times, it had people from, you know, just a range of departments, mostly sort of humanities. This time around, a lot of econ majors, math majors, and so on. It's different teaching a course on numbers to people who have quantitative skills versus people who don't. If you're teaching people who don't have quantitative skills, you have to keep asking yourself, what are all the gaps I need to fill in? And this time, I was less worried about gaps and more worried about, do I really know as much statistics as they do? There are two research projects and then a final paper. The final paper is about what we're discussing now, which is they're going to have to look at three very different assessments of expertise and compare them and reach some kind of conclusion. research projects, there are two of them, but they always end up being very much alike, even though I think about them differently. The first one was to pick a number, a set of numbers in the media, and critically assess how well the media handles them.
And so what issues have students chosen to examine in that way?
Well, I mean, so we go back to the methodological issues. Are there issues of causality that come up? Establishing causality is a very complex process. How well do the media address those issues? Or issues that come up with measuring anything, for example, and any measurement is imprecise. So any good measurement should have some way of indicating the range of measurement variation or error. But often that's something that gets lopped off. How well do the media handle that? So they deal with issues like that. So okay. I have one econ student who writes a financial newsletter and is very interested in rare earth metal industry. So he was attempting to explain how the numbers get used. And how some, that there are different ways of assessing the quality of an ore deposit, and how some are clearly better than others, but the better numbers don't always get the attention. And there are others who've looked at everything under the sun, high fructose corn syrup, you know, everything. So that was one assignment. The second assignment was to pick a study and show how that study ends up getting reported on, mm-hmm. and what happens to the numbers as they move from the study into the media. Those two projects end up overlapping. So most people wrote two very interesting papers.
How have you tweaked the course? How has it changed a little bit, even in just the 3 semesters that you've taught it?
I've gotten more and more into the issue of what science really looks like, what scientific truth really looks like. It's often assumed, you know, that science speaks with a clear voice, that there is research out there, it all says the same thing. There's a clear body of fact out there. And when you look at it, you find that's not always the case, that often claims are made that are not based on any good research at all. Often where there is good research, it's then contradicted by later studies. And the closer you look, the more contested scientific truth is. It's not that there are no truths out there, but establishing what's true and then actually figuring out how to use that information is particularly complicated. That kind of story about the instability of scientific research has itself become, now has become news.
What it brings to mind is the controversy, or supposed controversy, about global warming. How much consensus is there among scientists?
That's right. And how far do you want to go with that? I mean, is the fact that there are some dissenters on global warming, is that enough to say that anything might be true? I don't want them to come away with that idea. I want them simply to have a more critical perspective on, and be able to ask, you know, good questions about what the research actually looks like. How much is available? How much is hidden? To what extent are there evidence gaps? When can you say there's good evidence for something and when can't you? And that's not an easy question to answer. I mean, I told them at the beginning of the course, being a sort of total skeptic is no better than being totally gullible, totally accepting of everything you read. When you study something, you're inevitably attempting to draw conclusions from something you can see to something you can't. I may want to study Amherst students, but I'm probably not going to be able to study all 1,700 plus of them. I'm going to have to take a sample and then draw inferences from what I learned in the sample to the total population. And there's a whole series of issues that get raised about when you can draw inferences from a sample to the total population. Mm-hmm. Or we observe that things are correlated, that a certain time of year people get more colds. When it's colder out, people get more colds or something like that. But we want to draw inferences from that to causal relations, which is in a sense something we can't directly observe. How do you establish that a correlation implies causality or doesn't? And then there's a whole body of interesting theory that feeds into how I talk and think about the history of numbers, people like Michel Foucault. Foucault raised the idea that one important form of power occurs in this very subtle way simply by submitting everyone to a certain kind of measurement. When you measure something, you're not just observing and reflecting the world, you have an impact on it. So that feeds into a more recent body of literature that characterizes contemporary Western societies as audit societies. Societies increasingly where people and institutions are responsible for evaluating themselves and presenting it as numbers that anyone can supposedly read and interpret. So, for example, there's been some very good work done on law school rankings and how law schools, to some degree, reorient themselves in important ways around the rankings, because other people hold them accountable for their rankings and how that affects how they go about in the process of using my Mellon money to buy books, I realized there's so many different distinct literatures that usually don't talk to each other. I mean, there's a literature on the use of numbers in public discourse and how to evaluate those numbers. There are multiple historical literatures on the history of measurement and the history of probability and statistics, and lots of other kinds of measurement. There are histories of basic things like measurement of land or measurement of volume or measurement of weight. Starting with the literature on quantitative literacy, I found myself branching out in multiple directions. And that's exciting, and it's also very challenging to figure out how to synthesize it all, which is what I keep trying to do.